Blog Talk Radio.
Black Renaissance, white gold, white gold, white gold. Black Renaissance, white gold, white gold, white gold. Black Renaissance, white gold, white gold. Black Renaissance, white gold, white gold, white gold. It's a new summer era. We don't wanna see the heroes. We fighting against each other. It's the love that we need with one another. You understand? Trust might be love. No. Black Renaissance, white gold, white gold. Black Renaissance, white gold, white gold, white gold. Gotta get on your grind, don't confuse your mind. Let that dream come true. Stop playing a fool, chatting to my soul. Playing for forgiveness, never get lost in the world of sin. That's while I'm trying my vision. Seeing knowledge is given, knowing what's been hidden. Living life, only good intentions, not playing the victim. Standing by strength of perfection. Success is your best liquid. Becoming one of noble reflection. Positive vibration in the spirit. Turning for the moment with a blessing. Remember this lesson. Truth be told through these confessions. Why you guessing? Stop stressing. Stop stressing. Black Renaissance, white gold, white gold, white gold.
Good evening, everybody. Happy Sunday. Welcome to another Andy Morrell Dollhouse Radio production of Urban Society. I'm your host, James A. Jones. We just heard a song from Kimber entitled Black Renaissance. That's the introductory song to the show. So again, good evening, everybody, and happy 4th of December. We're in the month of December now, and therefore going deeper into winter. But we have to go into it in order to get out of it. Yes, we do. But on the subject of winter, something keeps popping in my head, or something that I keep thinking back on. It happened on this show, it did. It was during a time when I had a co-host or another host with me hosting the show, either or. And we were talking about, it was winter time then, and we were talking about winter, we were talking about snow. And I never will forget at that point in time, the Indy Morrell Dollhouse Radio producer, Indy Morrell, had called into the show, excuse me, and we were talking about winter time and snow and snow removal. And one of us had mentioned something about a snowplow. And Indy Morrell had asked the question, snowplow, what's that? I still laugh at that because, I mean, really, some people in this country have never seen a snowplow, do not know what a snowplow is. I mean, that must be, they don't know it, but that is an awesome experience. Can I say experience? That is an awesome state of mind to not know what a snowplow is. I mean, really. Well, I never forget that. Indy Morrell had asked, snowplow, what's that? Interesting. Anyway, so moving right along, and so is winter, moving right along. I want to read this into the show here. I think I read it into the show before, excuse me, but I want to read it again. It it concerns justice and or justice being denied. It says here, where justice is denied, where poverty enforced, where ignorance prevails, and where anyone class is made to feel that society is an organized conspiracy to oppress, rob, and degrade them, neither persons nor property will be safe. And the Honorable Frederick Douglass had said that. Just wanted to read that to the show. Who knows, that might be something I read into the show as another introductory feature. Very, very profound words. But also, moving right along, let me mention the topics that we're going to have tonight. I almost forgot that in my eagerness to rush right into these issues. But our first issue is going to be Birth of a Nation, the film. The second one will be War on Police, and then Trump. As we know, we were off. Well, the show wasn't done last week, which was what I call Thanksgiving weekend. But we're back tonight, and from that time until this time, much has taken place. Matter of fact, one thing that had taken place among many things was that I have been banned from Facebook. And I have been banned on Facebook actually on Thanksgiving Day. I didn't know I was banned until someone had said something and I went to either like or comment on what was said, as we do on Facebook. And then when I finished typing what I had written out or pressed like, some words came up telling me that I can't do what I tried to do because I have been banned for 24 hours from Facebook because I had violated protocol or some nonsense like that. But anyway, upon coming back on Facebook, my banishment having been lifted, you know me, I had to write something, which I did. Anyway, what I had written here was, I'm now aware. Let me get something straight here. Okay, I had to check something, but okay, I got that straight. Okay, I had written here, I'm now aware my Facebook banishment is up, has expired. Yeah, I was banned from Facebook for 24 hours as of yesterday, which was the 28th of November at that point in time. I was quite surprised to have learned of my banishment from this app. I guess my being banned was a situation of a thankful giving for someone. I was informed the reason for my banishment was a comment I posted about the Brooke Baldwin CNN segment wherein some white guy used the N-word when speaking about this new racist group now being given coverage, the alt-right. However, he used the whole word, not just the N. Likewise, in my comment yesterday, I too used the whole word. Basically, among other things, I was saying in these days, racist claims, since rappers use that word and they can't, it's not only a form of discrimination, but an infringement on their right of freedom of expression, First Amendment. Intelligent people wonder why someone would clamor for the use of that word. It's an offensive word, a term of abuse directed at someone, especially if they are African American. The white person asks, racist or not, why do African Americans call other African Americans that word in any circumstance? Answer, out of ignorance and or ignorant common usage of the word by those who are in their immediate environment. To African Americans of intelligence, it's of interest and or a phenomenon that word has taken on common usage to less intelligent African Americans and thus has trickled down to young African Americans as being a word that means many things but not what it actually means. That word, in its inception, was abusive to the ears of African Americans and still is to those of us with a sense of historical understanding. Yet to have this historical understanding requires one to have read books or to have an understanding and an appreciation of what has passed down to one by their elders. To not read books and to not have an understanding and appreciation of one's elders begets what? Ignorance, perhaps, and a disrespect for one's elders and thus oneself. I would imagine so for the majority of individuals. Yeah, they had banned me because I had used the word nigger in a posting that I had posted. And people tell me, well, let me just read what some of my Facebook friends had have responded back after I had written that. One of them has said, I have not been banished yet. How is this possible? And then I replied to her, no idea. I guess they do what they want to do and do it. No rhyme nor reason, but they will give you a reason. They even say, if you think this ban is in error, contact us. They then provide a space for you to write in. Ridiculous. And then another Facebook friend had responded by, giving his expounding on the outright, what it means. He says, I think outright is short for alternative right, meaning not mainstream right. It is also a code word for racist right. I do not think that it in itself is an organized group, but there are organized groups that do fall into that description. I thank them for that. Another Facebook friend had written, funny how they will ban those with intelligent topics of discussion for us to analyze, but will allow world star videos of unaware and unenlightened folks fighting, twerking, or behaving stupidly to pass through unfettered. Basically, it goes against the idea of what social media is. It's more like social engineering. Then he said, glad you're back, bro. And then another Facebook friend has said, mister, it's a trigger word that's in the filter. Maybe. And then she had also written a Facebook ex-con in 8 years. I'm shocked. I never have. LOL, LOL. Maybe she had meant me having been on Facebook for at least 8 years now, or she could have meant herself having been on Facebook for 8 years now, because basically that's about the length of time that I have been on Facebook, about 8 years. I came on Facebook, I think, in 2009, I do believe. Yes. So moving right along on this issue here, I have some other things that people have responded to. One Facebook friend has said, I'm a Facebook ex-con too. They are so ridiculous and hypocritical. I truly believe the sole purpose of social media is to monitor us and keep track of us who can't be trusted to conform to the bullshit standards of the New World Order. I'm a proud nonconformist, though, so they can kiss where the sun doesn't shine. That's what he wrote. Then I replied, yes, that's what other of my Facebook friends have called it, too, Facebook prison. The thing is, we're not the vulgar ones. That's what I had replied back, indeed. We're not the vulgar ones in this situation, not at all, because other people have written even worse stuff on Facebook. So I have heard. I don't go to those sites, so I don't know. I'm only going on what I've heard. You know, those actual racist sites. I mean, really, they have racist sites on Facebook. Outrageous. And none of those people are banned, not that I know of. Anyway, another Facebook friend has said, doesn't compute. Their standards are willy-nilly. I used the word several times when addressing that same segment. I guess you just had more hateful people reporting you. Then I said, yes, I've used it in other postings, and that didn't happen. Yep, that's why I said my being banned wasn't appreciated. No. I said, yep, that's why I said my being banned was appreciated by somebody. Terrible. And then another Facebook friend has said, I'm sorry you got banned. Totally ridiculous and unnecessary. And then another Facebook friend has said, why don't you all do something about it? Why don't you all ask all your friends to stay off Facebook of color? To stay off Facebook of color. Not just talk about it. Do something about it. If each one of you have 500 friends, that's 1,500 and so on. Call each other instead. Chat, Instagram, just stay off Facebook. But y'all can't. Well, then another Facebook friend said, tell me how we can make it work. Interesting. Okay, it's like 15 minutes to the hour. Now we're going to go into our first music break. And let me see what I have here. I have Sheree Lurie, her song entitled Mirage. That's Sheree spelled C-H-E-R-A-E and last name L-E-R-I. So I'm saying Sheree Lurie, her song Mirage. So here we go. I don't know if that's going to happen. I see the song is not playing. I don't know what's going on. Because also I see something else here in the studio setup that I haven't seen before. And I'm wondering, wondering if perhaps I should hang up and then try and call back in. But I don't know what happened in that case. I don't know if the whole show will just go blank. And, So let me just continue with what I was on. Okay, so I'm just going to go on and continue. Right now I'm going to go on into, let me see. I'm wondering if someone who might be listening in can tell me if I'm being heard or not. I don't know. Okay, so everything seems strange. Okay, I'm sorry. I'm confused here about a situation that I'm having. Okay, well, I think I've logged out. I'm going to hang up and call back into the show. You'll excuse me. I'm going to see what's going to happen. Okay, now it looks better than what it had. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to go on into that music break to make sure everything is correct. So just hold on for a second. I was saying earlier if you all didn't hear me, and you probably didn't. Wow. Anyway, I'm going to play the song from Sheree Lurie entitled Mirage. I'm going to spell that name for you. That's C-H-E-R-A-E Lurie, L-E-R-I. Her song is entitled Mirage, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to Indy Morrell's Dollhouse Radio. You're listening to Urban Society. I'm your host, James A. Jones. And we just heard the song from Sheree Lerae entitled Mirage. And I'm thinking that everything should be in order now. I'm going to have to listen. Well, right now, I don't know what happened earlier. I'm not even knowing if I was heard earlier. But the only way that I will know that is once the show is over, I'm going to have to play the show back to see what was or what wasn't going on in the beginning of the show. Wow. And it's going to be a situation wherein if I wasn't heard, what I had been saying, I'm going to have to bring that back up next week. I'm not going to go back into saying what I had said because I may have been heard and don't want to repeat everything all over again and miss out on going on further into the show. But what I want to read into the show right now is something that just had taken place earlier in the week. It concerns some black guy, NFL player or maybe ex-player, who was shot. They're saying in like a road rage incident. And the guy who, black guy, shot by a white guy. And it turns out that the white guy was just released. I mean, well, not just released, but I guess they talked to him and heard what took place. And said, okay, go home. And we'll talk to you later. Out MF and rages. But anyway, the story here goes, so it's printed. It says here that Ronald Gasser, the man authorities say shot and killed former NFL player Joe McKnight, was released from custody overnight without being charged, Jefferson Parish Sheriff's Office said Friday. Gasser, 54, has not been formally charged, said JPSO, that is the Jefferson Parish Sheriff's Office, Colonel John Fortunato. Investigators are consulting with the district attorney's office on decision whether to formally charge Gasser. The article goes further to say that McKnight was shot about 3 p.m. on Thursday, December 1st. A witness who declined to give her name says she saw a man at the intersection yelling at McKnight, who was trying to apologize. The man shot McKnight more than once, the witness said. She said he shot McKnight. McKnight stood over him and said, I told you don't fuck with me. Then the man fired again, she said. Authorities named the shooter as Ronald Gasser, 54, and said he stayed at the scene and turned his gun into officers. Gasser was in custody and was being questioned. The sheriff said McKnight did not have a gun, and deputies did not find a gun outside McKnight's vehicle. Now, here we go again. One of these situations. But again, as we know, reverse that if the situation had been reversed, a black man shoot a white guy. I mean, it's a no-brainer that black guy would be in jail right now having to explain his story over and over and over again. But yet, this guy was just released. Outrageous, but moving right along. I just wanted to have read that into the show because I had seen it first on internet news, and then I began to see it pop up in my Facebook timeline. Everybody seems to be talking about it. I don't know what they're saying about it on national TV because still, I haven't turned my TV on still yet. I watch Netflix and or YouTube, movies, things like that. I ain't turning my TV on because I don't want to see this dumb stuff. I really don't. It affects me profoundly. I don't want to see it, don't need to see it. But then again, even concerning this situation, in another article I was reading about this situation, it turns out that it was some kind of a road rage situation. And the guy it's being said that the guy who did the shooting even shot through his window at this dude. So it would appear that the guy, McKnight, was possibly leaning down at the guy's window, talking to him or whatever. I mean, I don't know, but doing whatever. And the guy just pulled out his gun and pow, 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 pow. I mean, come on, really? And then I guess when the guy fell, the white guy gets out of his car, stands over him, and shoots him again. And is claiming what? Self-defense or the stand your ground rule because he supposedly feared for his life? Out MF and rages. But you know, this really don't surprise me, but it's insulting to me. It actually is. It's insulting to me that number one, that white guy had such, how can I put it, that he had such non respect, can I say that? I guess such, he has such little concern for this black guy. He didn't see him as he saw, as he would see someone else who wouldn't be black. I mean, he just killed him, shot him. You know, and to me, you know, I'm very much, I can't say aware of that situation in particular, but that kind of situation I'm very much aware of to a lesser degree. God bless for that. Because the kinds of situations that I have been in with white men and just white people, period, I mean, they never evolved to that level. But at the same time, that kind of disrespect, that kind of not seeing me as they see themselves was there. Because in another show not long ago, I had mentioned how I was in this this supermarket, and some guy is going to push my carriage into me that I'm standing in front of. And in fact, just saying, I was standing in front of my carriage in what I would consider in a, well, how can I put it? I was standing in front of my carriage, being what I call standing tactically, you know, not wanting to be directly in front of somebody or someone else's body, in particular a white person, because who knows, they might just, you know, push up against me. Like what? Like there's not enough room to not push up against me? Because if that happens, the MF, he gets elbowed. Yes, he does. If it's a she, that might be different, depending on my mindset. I mean, really. But anyway, like I said, same, not the same situation, but like similar, that kind of thing. I mean, how are you just going to push your carriage into somebody? Not your carriage, but again, it was my carriage. Push my carriage into me, and supposedly he wants me to think accidentally. No, it don't happen like that. And I would say, secondly, you know, I myself, I would never do that to anybody. Or if I did do that to somebody, it was because I'd be pissed at them to let them know, here, take that. You know, but I'm not like that. So therefore, that's why I can say that I would never do that to nobody. Number one, because I got more respect for others as well as I have respect for myself. You know, but again, these kind of situations happen. And you know, reading about this situation, you know, I have said even on Facebook, but who knows, that might be the way I go out. You know, one of these clowns, you know, accust me in some ill form, and I just do what I do, and then he might have a weapon. I don't know, but I hope, like I said on Facebook, if such should take place, I hope that I am proportionally armed as he or she might happen to be. I hope that our situations are proportional. You know, whatever they got, I hope I got it too, and we can go to town. I don't want to say the war, but yes, we can go to town. Anyway, moving right along, I have this other piece here on this Michael Slager person. We all remember him, that cop in South Carolina who has shot Walter Scott as he, well, during a traffic stop, and for some reason he ran away, and end up that this cop just shot Walter Scott a few times, shot him and killed him while he ran away, and this cop is going to claim he feared for his life. Again, S-T-U-P-I-D, stupid. But yet, people pick up on that, you know, or even they even talk ugly. Well, why did he run? That's neither here nor there. Why did he shoot him? That's the real question. Why did he kill him? That's the real question. Okay, So on this issue here with this, it says here, jury deliberates on Michael Slager. But, you know, that's rather a lengthy article there. And basically what it's talking about is talking about the jury actually going into deliberations on Wednesday. And being that by now is a past issue, I'm not even going to read that out or read from that article. I'm going to read the next article that has come out about this particular situation, this jury. And this article states here, it's entitled, Walter Scott Shooting, Single Juror Forces Deadlock and Pushes Trial into Fifth Week. And this article here, it says here that the jury in the murder trial of former police officer Michael Slager, who shot and killed unarmed American Walter Scott as he ran away, is at deadlock after a single juror indicated during dramatic scenes in court they were unwilling to find the 35-year-old guilty. The jury, consisting of 11 white people and one black person, will now continue deliberations on Monday, drawing the month-long trial in South Carolina into a fifth week. If their decision is not unanimous, a mistrial will be declared, leaving prosecutors to decide whether to pursue a retrial. The released footage has been cited by advocates as among the clearest evidence of the fatal consequence of racially biased policing in the U.S. They're talking about, when they say the released footage, they're talking about the video that was shown of this police person killing this person, Walter Scott. The article goes further to say, on Friday, after 14 hours of deliberations, the jury's foreman indicated in a note to South Carolina Judge Clifton Newman that they would not be able to reach a unanimous decision. The jury then returned a second time in the afternoon, indicating it was still deadlocked with a unanimous decision hinging on just one juror. During tense scenes in the courtroom, a note from that single juror was read aloud by Newman. I have that that statement that juror had written concerning his refusal or her refusal. It's not been indicated, at least that I know of, if it is a man or a woman. Someone had indicated that it was a woman, but I don't know that. But anyway, I'll read that statement out later on as I finish this article here. Anyway, the article goes on to say that in a subsequent note sent by the foreman, it was stated that the juror wanted to leave as they were having issues. I guess because they were reaching no agreement, that juror just wanted to say, let's just go. We can't reach a decision. I'm out of here. And I guess they had to make that person stay. You can't just leave. Anyway, the article goes further to say that under South Carolina law, a juror, cannot be sent out to deliberate again after it has returned for a second time with no verdict unless it requests further explanation of the law. The jury's foreperson made that request to Newman. Schlager's defense team have moved for a mistrial, while the state prosecution urged the judge to provide the jury with the explanation it requested. After a brief recess, Newman indicated he would not declare a mistrial and requested a note from the jury asking precisely what explanation of the law was required. At this stage of things, with the jury indicating a willingness and interest, it would be improper for the court to declare a mistrial, Newman said. That's the judge. A foreperson for the jury then told the judge in a note that they, the jury, are beat and need some time. We will have our questions at the time. The jury's request for explanation likely relates to an earlier application on Thursday made by the jury requesting clarification on the legal distinction between fear and passion, the potential difference between a claim of justifiable self-defense, which Slager's legal team have argued throughout, and a manslaughter conviction, which would find that Schlager unlawfully killed Scott in the heat of passion. Newman has declined to provide the jury guidance, telling them on Friday morning that it was solely for you to decide. In response to the first declaration of deadlock, Newman called the jury back into the courtroom and urged them, under a so-called Allen charge, to continue deliberations and push for a decision. And this is in quotes, I guess, from the judge. He says, "It isn't always easy for two people to agree. So when 12 people must agree, it must be more difficult," he said. After the day's dramatic hearing in court, members of the Scott family said during a short press conference that they were hopeful the remaining juror would change their mind. "We feel the prayers," this is in quotes, and someone from the Scott family saying, "We feel the prayers, we feel the presence of God, and we know that God has been moving in our favor. It's been a long day, it's been a tough day, but it's not over. said Anthony Scott, Walter's brother. With reference to the Book of Psalms, Scott continued in tears, "Joy will come in the morning. Joy will come. We know that we are going to receive our joy because God said so." The Scott family's attorney echoed Scott's feelings of hope, adding, "This is not a black family against Michael Slager. This is the world against Michael Slager." On Wednesday, Newman allowed the jury to consider the lesser charge of voluntary manslaughter, meaning an unlawful killing that occurred without malice, but rather in the heat of passion after provocation. Voluntary manslaughter carries a sentence of 2 to 30 years in prison, while a murder sentence carries 30 years to life in prison. The trial has been characterized by an aggressive defense from Slager's lawyers, who unsuccessfully attempted to have the pivotal video struck out as evidence and then accused the eyewitness who filmed it of Ferdinand Santana of being ideologically opposed to law enforcement. During closing arguments, Slager's lead defense lawyer, Andrew Savage, unleashed a tirade against the media, arguing his client has become a poster boy for perceived police brutality around the U.S. and placed blame for the incident on Scott, a father of four, for his felonious conduct. The prosecution have argued consistently that the evidence contained in the video alone is overwhelming and proves Slager killed Scott unlawfully. Slager has also been indicted on federal charges of violating Scott's civil rights, which also carries a maximum sentence of life. So with that having been read, we're going to go on into our next music break, which I have talked over, but we're going to get to it now. And then when we come back, I'm going to read what that juror had to say as to why he or she can't reach a decision. So now we're going to hear a song from Big Sean featuring Drake. The song is entitled Blessing. So here we go.
I mean, whatever is
worth, I give whatever I'm worth. For my niggas who gon' go to hell and back for me, I'ma give them heaven on earth for a hell of a check, yeah, whichever come first. Blessings on blessings on blessings. Look at my life, man, that's lessons on lessons on lessons. I treat the beat like it's a reverend. I tell the truth like, Father, forgive me. These are all my confessions, man, this wasn't luck, it was destined. I done lost homies who been with me since Ed and Eddie, who flipped like confetti. And then when you back, they back to call you dog. That shit can get petty. Bitch, don't get no dap to me, nigga. Funny thing about talking behind my back is that it just keep coming back to me, nigga. Was off for a sec, now it's back to me, nigga. You mad at me, this ain't what I want, man, it's what it had to be. This is that late night working after three, man. This is why my old girl was mad at me. This why I'm your majesty, man. The click is the tightest, the pussy the tightest, the drinks are the coldest, the future the brightest, the feet not divided, the love is divided, and I just gotta thank God that we got it. Bless. I don't know what I would do without a crew. Look like we robbed a bank, but all we make is deposits. Your profit with profit, oh God. I'm here for a good time, not a long time, you know, I haven't had a good time in a long time, you know, I'm way up, I feel blessed. Way up, I feel blessed.
Straight up.
I'm way up, I feel blessed.
Straight up.
Way up, I feel flat.
I ain't gonna say that we back or nothing, cause that implies that we're back from something. If we're back from something, it's some checks you owe us. I expect that payment, nothing less or over. I don't need them favors that you asked me for. I could give two fucks about where the Grammys go. I just gave out Grammys on my Instagram. Them OVO boys, the business, man.
It is what it is. Trust me, you get what you give. Yeah. You gotta come to my side and see how we live. Yeah. I cannot see heaven being much better than this. Yeah. Blessings on blessings for me and my niggas from the six. Look at what we did. Yeah. Be quiet, I'm doing a toast.
For niggas that don't really do shit, I swear y'all be doing the most. Stop worrying about whoever's next. I am just worried about my mama worrying less. I think I'm famous enough, I don't need any more press. I am convinced I'm the only one left that's still doing this shit, man. I'm here for a good time, not a long time, you know, I haven't had a good time in a long time, you know, I'm way up, I feel blessed. Way up, I feel blessed.
Straight up.
I'm way up, I feel blessed.
Straight up.
Way up, I feel
my
blessed.
My grandma just died, I'm the man of the house. So every morning I'm up cause I can't let him down. Down. Always down for the cause, never down for the count. I guess when your stars align, you do like the solar system and plan it out. So I'm going overtime on the overtime. Yeah, I'm not invested, but you can't attest it. $1 million goals, man, it's to manifest it. The family never going anorexic. I pay my mortgage and electric. Never going under, even with anesthetics. At the top of the rap game and progressing. Check after check, checking off my checklist. Trying to blow my cake, just know that's the death wish. No mistakes in life ever, it's only lessons. Shit feel like Shaq and Penny got back together. You tore the game apart, who put it back together?
I'm here for a good time, not a long time, you know, I haven't had a good time in a long time, you know, I'm way up, I feel blessed. Way up, I feel blessed.
Straight up.
I'm way up, I feel blessed.
Straight up.
Way up, I feel blessed.
Welcome back to Andy Morrell's Dollhouse Radio. You're listening to Urban Society. We just heard the song from Big Sean featuring Drake. The song is entitled Blessings. And I'm your host, James A. Jones. When we had left to go into the music break, I was saying that when we come back, I'm going to read off what that holdout juror said concerning the reason why he or she is holding out or not able to come to a proper verdict in his or her mind. It goes, judge, I understand the position of the court, but I cannot in good conscience consider a guilty verdict. I respect the position of my fellow jurors, some of who oppose my position. I expect those who hold opposing views not to change their minds because I see them as good, honest people. Therefore, I regret to say we may never reach a unanimous decision. As you stated, we must follow the instructions you have given us and the law. We all struggle with the death of a man and with all that has been put before us. I still cannot, without a reasonable doubt, convict the defendant. At the same time, my heart does not want to have to tell Scott family that the man who killed their son, brother, and father is innocent. But with choices, I cannot and will not change my mind. That's what that person says. But it should be no surprise. I mean, it's not surprise. Well, it should be a surprise. But then again, in this world, it's not no surprise. I almost use that phrase with everything being equal. I guess I could, with everything being equally the same as it has always been, it's not surprising at all. It's just outrageous. It's just really, really, really outrageous. And you know, I have wanted to pull up on the internet the speed with which a verdict had been rendered at the murder trial of Emmett Till, those two white guys who were charged with killing Emmett Till. Because I wanted to pull that up, but I just didn't have time to do so. Because if I'm not mistaken, that jury didn't even stay out an hour. maybe I'm exaggerating here, but it's possible they walked out of the courtroom, into the jury room, and came right back out. They're not guilty. Because they were taking their time to convict, at that point in time, a white man for killing, in their minds, a nigger. Outrageous. And now we have this person here in 2016 unable to make up his or her mind as to if this cop did or did not actually kill Walter Slager without justifiable cause. And even based upon the reason that this cop Slager has given, that he feared for his life. when Scout is seen running away. And then again, even in spite of the evidence shown on the video, you know, the new phrase today, we've heard it often enough to know it, is that, you know, we haven't seen what we haven't seen per the video, although we did see what we did see while watching the video. They're saying that, well, still, you didn't see what you didn't see, meaning what may have led up to it. What is that supposed to mean? But anyway, moving right along, going on into the Nate Parker film, Birth of a Nation. I have this article here. It's an article where he was giving a talk. It took place sometime back in November, November 19th, matter of fact. He was giving a talk to a rather large audience, and I have that here. And the article says here that on Saturday, Norfolk native, I guess that's Norfolk, Virginia, where the rifleman was. Remember Chuck Connors, the rifleman? Y'all just laughing. God bless, I can laugh in spite of this bullshit. Okay? Anyway, it says here, on Saturday, Norfolk native Parker made clear from the start that he had come with a purpose. It's in quotes. He says, "I'm not here to entertain you. I'm here to challenge you," he told the audience. "Today, we grow. This is my hope. Even if I just make you angry to the point where you wake up tomorrow where you feel different about your beliefs." Parker co-wrote, co-produced, and directed Birth of a Nation, and he stars in the lead role. To say that while growing up in the projects of Norfolk, he did not know, he did not have role models, had no grasp of history, and had never heard of Turner until later, when he left Virginia to go to college. "My professor started to talk about the uprising, and I thought to myself, are you telling me this man did those things in Virginia, right where I grew up?" Parker said. "I learned he was illiterate. I learned he was literate and a preacher. It made me question so many things that I had learned growing up. I am a black man in America, and my history was not immediately available to me." During the 1831 uprising led by Turner, slaves killed between 55 and 65 people, the highest number of fatalities caused by any slave rebellion in the South. It lasted just several days, but because Turner went into hiding for several months, there remained widespread fear in the region, and white militia retaliated against many slaves. The rebels were caught and tried in Jerusalem, a town called Jerusalem, I guess, there in Virginia, what is today Cortland, a few miles from Belmont Plantation, where the rebellion was put down. Dozens were executed, but mobs and militia murdered more than 100 additional slaves in reprisal. Turner was hanged on November 11th, 1831, and his corpse flayed, beheaded, and quartered. That means they cut him up, cut off his head, and they just cut his body up. Anyway, there had been much debate about whether Turner was a hero who gave his life fighting oppression or an agitator whose uprising cost the lives of innocent people. I'm going to move right along. What is characteristic of a hero? Well, it's a question here. What is a characteristic of a hero? If it's just in deeds, we should ask ourselves, are all our forefathers heroes? Parker told moderator John B. Raley, editor of the editorial pages of the Winston-Salem Journal and an expert on the rebellion. "In my opinion, Nat Turner," this is in quotes, "in my opinion, Nat Turner is a great black hero, just like some people would say Patrick Henry is a great white hero." Parker said he made the film because he wanted to challenge a lot of existing dispositions about injustice. "We have to be honest about the history of this country, and we need to confront it," Parker said. "I want to get to the place I want to get to the place where when we see injustice, we do something right away." We have to find a way to change the hearts and minds of the people around, clean the wound, sew it up, and see to it that it will heal. Responding to a question from the audience about what weapons Turner would use in 2016, Parker answered social media. Anyone further to say that if Nat Turner had Twitter, if any of these people had it, the revolution would have went a very different way, he said. It's a very powerful tool. When Rayleigh asked if he believes Turner should be pardoned today, Parker paused. And then he says in quotes, "I think if Nat was here, I would be asking him if he would be pardoning you all," Parker said, gesturing toward the audience. "I don't think it was Nat Turner's goal to be forgiven by those who did him wrong." When I read that, I liked that response. Indeed, I did. I really did like that response. I'll read that again. When the interviewer asked Parker, he asked if he believes Turner should be pardoned today. And it says that Parker paused and responded by saying, "I think if Nat was here, I would be asking him if he would be pardoning you all," Parker said, gesturing toward the audience. "I don't think that it was Nat Turner's goal to be forgiven by those who did him wrong." The article goes further to say that Birth of a Nation premiered in 2016. No, Birth of a Nation premiered at the 2016 Sundance Film Festival in Park City, Utah in January and received standing ovations. It was picked up by Fox Searchlight Pictures in a $17.5 million deal, the largest deal at the film festival to date. But as we know, there was a lot of controversy about that movie when it came out. Well, not necessarily about the movie per se, but the conversation went to Nate Parker himself, which was another form of deflection. In my opinion, one can even call it gaslighting. But however, what it was deflected toward was something that had taken place, as we know, in this guy Nate Parker's past. But then again, as some people question, why now? Because that guy, as I said before on another show talking about this film and Nate Parker, he had done other movies previously, and having done so, why hadn't all these previous, or why hadn't this allegation, why hadn't this situation come up then about the rape that he was accused of but was acquitted of or whatever? You know, he's been in a few movies, and none of that came up, so why now? That could be a serious, that's a good question. That's a damn good question. But no answers. No answers. But some want to say, well, it doesn't matter when. Yes, it does matter. Anyway, that's the movie, and I can't say I hope to see that movie, but no doubt eventually I will see that movie. But then again, I had also read the book. And then now because, you know, it's back in, I don't want to really say, but I guess I will say, well, being that is being proffered to our minds again, I think I'm going to go on and read the book again. Matter of fact, I do in fact have it on my tablet. I think I got it for like 99 cents on my tablet. This Amazon Kindle, the tablet thing, it's great because you can get all kind of books on this thing, which I am doing a lot for free, and especially historical books, some for free and some for as little as 99 cents. You can't beat that. So that's why it's good that, like I said, being that Trump is going to be the president, I'm going to be doing a lot of reading for the next 4 years. I know damn well I will be. But anyway, moving right along, still on the Nate Parker situation, some history about Nathaniel, well, not Nate Parker, but on Nat Turner. Let's go from the film to the actual man. No, right now we have to go into a music break. I was checking the time. Yes, and let's not go too far over the allotted time. Okay, so we're going to go into a music break right now. This is from Jasmine Sullivan, her song entitled Brand New. And we'll be right back. Thank you.
If I had a dime for every dude with a rap dream, you know the girls would be riding, working two jobs, but the boys at home making mixtapes with a Don't Disturb on the door now. Then I buy a Jeep dress every Friday, cause I go to every show on the weekend. And I gotta look good when I'm prepping, yeah. He about to sign a deal, he about to go.
Welcome back to India Morrell Dollhouse Radio. You're listening to Urban Society. I'm your host, James A. Jones. And we just heard a song from Jasmine Sullivan entitled Brand New. And right now we're on the issue of Nat Turner. And I find that I would consider him a hero in the same lights as a George Washington or Thomas Jefferson or any of those American revolutionary figures. But it's interesting that that we today, black people, can't actually say that. And I guess even if a white person would say that, they would be looked at, you know, asking, like, what the fuck are you talking about? But really, when you think about it, yes, he was. He was fighting for freedom, not only his, but the freedom of other individuals that was and had been denied them because of tyrannical individuals and their tyrannical legislation. Anyway, this I had got from Wikipedia on Nat Turner. For those of you who don't know who Nat Turner was and what he was about, I'm going to read some of this here. It says, Nat Turner, born October 2nd, 1800, hanged or died November 11th, 1831, was an enslaved African-American who led the Nat Turner Slave Rebellion of slaves and free blacks in Southampton County, Virginia, on August 21st, 1831, that resulted in the deaths of 55 to 60 white people. In retaliation, white militias and mobs killed more than 200 black people while putting down the rebellion. And I always find it interesting, and really, as quiet as it is kept and as little as it is known, that the same type white racist attitudes that prevail then against black people, though that same kind of racist white attitude is here today against black people. And it's like so many of us don't see that, don't know that, because I guess that's because we don't have a historical understanding, because we haven't really read anything about the past. Because I always say, in a real sense, the past, the present, and the future are connected. And in a real sense, if something was wrong in the past and it hasn't been corrected in the present, it's going to be wrong in the future too. So therefore, again, the past, the present, and the future are indeed connected. Yes, they are. So moving right along still, this article here says that the rebels went from plantation to plantation, gathering horses and guns, freeing other slaves along the way, and recruiting other blacks who wanted to join their revolt. During the rebellion, Virginia legislators targeted free blacks with a colonization bill, which allocated new funding to remove them, and a police bill, sounds a lot like the crime bill, doesn't it? And a police bill that denied free blacks trials by jury and made any free blacks convicted of a crime subject to sale and relocation. Whites organized militias and called out regular troops to suppress the uprising. In addition, white militias and mobs attacked blacks in areas, killing an estimated 200, many of whom were not involved in the revolt. In the aftermath, the state quickly arrested and executed 57 blacks accused of being part of Turner's slave rebellion. Turner hid successfully for 2 months. When found, he was tried, convicted, sentenced to death, and hanged. And the article goes further to say that born into slavery on October 2nd in 1800 in Southampton County, Virginia, the African-American boy was recorded as Nat by Benjamin Turner. Turner knew little about the background of his father, who was believed to have escaped from slavery when Turner was a young boy. Turner spent his entire life in Southampton County, Virginia, a plantation area where slaves comprised the majority of the population. He was identified as having natural intelligence and quickness of apprehension, surpassed by few. He learned to read and write at a young age. Deeply religious, Nat was often seen fasting, praying, or immersed in reading the stories of the Bible. That's interesting because, as we know, during that time, blacks were forbidden to read under penalty of serious punishment, even death. But there was Nat Turner, able to read and write. It goes further to say that Turner's religious convictions manifested as frequent visions, which he interpreted as messages from God. His belief in the visions was such that when Turner was 22 years old, he ran away from his owner. He returned a month later after claiming to have received a spiritual revelation. Turner often conducted Baptist services, preaching the Bible to his fellow slaves, who dubbed him the prophet. Turner garnered white followers such as Ethel T. Brantley, whom Turner was credited with having convinced to cease from his wickedness. In early 1828, Turner was convinced that he was ordained for some great purpose in the hands of the Almighty. See what religion can do to a mind? But God bless him. I mean, you know, religion can work well at some points in times. I mean, whatever. While working in his owner's field, let me read that part again. In early 1828, Turner was convinced that he was ordained for some great purpose in the hands of the Almighty while working in his owner's field on May 12th. Turner heard a loud noise in the heavens, and the Spirit instantly appeared to me and said, "The serpent was loosened, and Christ had laid down the yoke he had borne for the sins of men, and that I should take it on and fight against the serpent, for the time was fast approaching when the first should be last, and the last should be first." And it goes further. I'm going to skip here. And it goes further to say that Turner started with a few trusted fellow slaves. And it says, the rebels traveled from house to house, freeing slaves and killing white people they found. The rebels ultimately included more than 70 enslaved and free men of color. And we basically know the rest about the rebellion, but that was a quick, summary of Nat Turner and his growing up and the kind of person he was. But more is to be revealed in the book that has been written about him, which I must read, or I shall make it a must reading. Indeed, I shall. But still, moving right along, there's this article that I had gotten off that a Facebook friend of mine had posted on her timeline, and being that we're Facebook friends, it had appeared on my timeline as well. And I found it interesting. Yes, it was interesting. And I guess I'll try to read it out here. It says, the article is entitled, Why Nat Turner and the Southampton Rebels Killed Children. Because it's a known fact that during that uprising, they spared no one. They spared man, woman, nor child, nor infant. No, they didn't. But like you said, oppression oppresses. Oppresses the mind to, you know, do all manner of things. I mean, it's horrible. It's actually horrible. That's why, it's rare to find people who have been, a person who is oppressed, to find that person, him or her, thinking properly, basically, and not being, just totally out of their heads, out of their minds, doing all kind of crazy things. It's rare to find that. It actually is. Because again, oppression oppresses. It does. But this article here, again, it's entitled Why Nat Turner and the Southampton Rebels Killed Children. And it's by someone by the name of Sarah N. Roth. And it says, Sarah N. Roth is Associate Professor of History and Coordinator of the African and African American Studies Program at Wilderness University in Chester, Pennsylvania. She is the author of Gender and Race in Antebellum Popular Culture and producer of the Nat Turner Project. Something else to look into, definitely so. Anyway, this article here starts off by saying that one of the most troubling aspects of the Southampton Revolt of 1831 was the killing of children. It was awful. It was horrible. But basically, by all accounts, only about 70 white people were killed during the Nat Turner Revolt. And of those 70 white people that were killed, not more than 10, 15 children got caught up in that as well. And, those things happen, but so much is said about that, the children. But at the same time, what about the black children? Generation after generation after generation growing up under an inner system of slavery. What about them? There is no remorse for them. There's no pity. There is no pity for them. Matter of fact, we're rather told forget about them. But anyway, moving right along. So again, it said, one of the most troubling aspects of the Southampton Revolt of 1831 was the killing of children. As a contemporary observer put it, whole families, father, mother, daughters, sons, suckling babes, and school children were butchered, thrown into heaps, and left to be devoured by hogs and dogs, or to putrefy on the spot. 10 children under the age of 5 died in the rebellion. Those over the centuries who have condemned the rebels have fixated on this part of the incident to highlight the savage brutality, the injustice, and the lack of the slaves who rose up in Southampton County on that hot August night. But stop there. You heard all those words? those over the centuries who have condemned the rebels, have fixated on this part of the incident to highlight the savage brutality, the injustice, and the lack of honor. But what about the founding fathers who owned slaves? What about all those words being ascribed to them, which we don't do, but which we should do? You see, and the thing is, in a real sense, the media, I won't say our media, but the media does the same thing today to us. Anyway, and the article goes on to say, as one descendant of white victims of the revolt has said, the killing of the women and children sticks in my craw more than anything else. Nat Turner would certainly be remembered better by history if he had limited the killing to adult males or just white adults. Really? Well, I'm saying that. Really? Deflection. That's what this is. Anyway, the article goes further to say that even those who support Turner in his belief that violence against slaveholders constituted an acceptable means of throwing the slave system often balk at the rebels' willingness to take the life of infants and children who had themselves played no part in the oppression of African Americans. What are we to make of Nat Turner's determination to attack whites without regard to age or sex? It is possible that it was simply a byproduct of indiscriminate rage at all those who were a part of the race that had enslaved him and his people for generations. The choice to disregard the personhood of white children may have arisen from sheer vindictiveness against those who had long ignored the humanity of black children. It may have been to employ the religious framework that was of central importance to Nat Turner, a manifestation of the biblical injunction, an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. On the other hand, there may have been an ideology behind his decision, a message Turner wanted to send. I'm going to have to stop there, and we have another music break to go into, but I shall return to this article when we do get back. Right now we're going to go into the music of, let me see who we're going to hear here. I just seen someone, this guy, Raphael. His song is titled Stay Lit. So here we go. We'll be right back.
Woo! Leaning to the left side. Leaning to the right. Mud in my two cups. I've been faded all night. I love calling you at 4 in the morning. Faded. Telling you things about me I wouldn't tell you sober. I got problems big enough to break the realest nigga. I got family who never see the bigger picture. I got women bad enough to turn the straightest bitches. I keep flirting with these hoes, but I never finish. Cause I do not know when I'ma go, when I'ma die. So I drink and I smoke, I stay lit. I stay lit. Yeah, so I stay lit. Yeah, yeah, stay lit. Yeah, stay lit. Leaning to the right side. Leaning to the left. Sipping on this, oh my God. There ain't nothing left. Somebody pass me an already lit spliff.
Do it.
I'm way too faded to roll one.
Just do it.
Fitting in with all the misfits.
Do it.
I need a cold one. I got problems big enough to break the realest nigga.
Yeah.
I got family who never see the bigger picture.
Hell no.
I got women bad enough to turn the straightest bitches.
Oh.
I keep flirting with these hoes, but I never finish. Cause I do not know.
I don't know
when I'ma go, when soon I'ma die. So I drink and I smoke, I stay lit. I stay lit. Yeah, so I stay lit.
Welcome back to Indy Morrell Dollhouse Radio. You're listening to Urban Society. I'm your host, James A. Jones. And we just heard a song from Raphael entitled Stay Lit. That was Raphael. So I'm going back into the article of Nat Turner from this person who wrote about his proclivity to include children in this massacre. Okay, this person says that on the other hand, I had read this before, but we'll read it again to hook it up. On the other hand, there may have been an ideology behind this decision, a message Turner wanted to send. Perhaps he intended to demonstrate his conviction that slavery should come to an end, even if it meant wiping out all future generations of slaveholders. There may, however, have also been a tactical reason for the decision to include white children among the rebels' victims. Killing all whites, adults, and children alike could have represented, in other words, a calculated rational strategy implemented as a meaning of giving the revolt its best chance of succeeding. There is evidence that Nat Turner and his men did not embark on the killing of children impulsively in a spontaneous fit a blind fury. Instead, the main conspirators adopted this course of action as their official policy several hours before they began the revolt. When they met at the Cabin Pond to finalize their plans, Turner and the six other men present agreed that until we had armed and equipped ourselves and gathered sufficient force, neither age nor sex was to be spared. A slave revolt was a precarious undertaking. In North America, no major concerted action by slaves had ended in the deaths of more than one or two white people. The rebels understood that once the insurrection began, it would have the best chance of succeeding if they could avoid leaving anyone alive who might sound the alarm to nearby planters. If that happened, armed whites would descend on the neighborhood and would quickly overwhelm the small band of rebels. For that reason, Nat Turner and his allies decided against breaking open the bolted door at the first house with an axe, reflecting that it might create an alarm in the neighborhood. The nearest house was only 600 yards away. The violent obliteration of a wooden door, accompanied by the screams and cries of the white family inside, might have awakened the neighbors and brought them to the farm, armed to see what had caused the noise. A similar rationale, calculated concern, lay behind the killing of a baby who resided at the first household the rebels attacked. After Nat Turner entered Joseph Travis's home quietly by an upstairs window, his men struck dead Travis, his wife, her son, and an orphaned 16-year-old apprentice. Turner later related that there was a little infant sleeping in a cradle that was forgotten until we had left the house and gone some distance when Henry and Will returned and killed it. Going out of their way to kill this infant, slumbering peacefully in his cradle, might seem unnecessarily cruel of the rebels. But on a warm summer night in the country, when windows may have been left open to catch a breeze, Turner and his men worried about sounds carrying to the neighbors, as they demonstrated when they chose not to break down Travis's door. The unrelenting crying of a baby may have alerted those who live nearby that something was not right, and someone may have gone to investigate. Nat Turner and his compatriots were taking no chances that a seemingly harmless baby might be the undoing of their cause. Since the rebellion was suppressed less than 36 hours after it began, it is not certain what course Nat Turner and his lieutenants might have followed if they had managed to secure enough manpower and weapons to pose a more sustained challenge to Virginia slaveholders. There is some indication that at that point they would have abandoned their initial position and preserved the lives of children and other non-threatening whites they encountered. Indiscriminate massacre was not their intention after they obtained foothold. A white official at the time learned from Turner capture. Beyond strategy, no. In the minds of slaves who participated in the uprising, the white children of Southampton County were not the innocents that Southern newspaper editors portrayed them to be. Though the children whose lives were taken in the rebellion had not yet assumed the role of master or mistress, there was no reason for the rebels to believe those children would behave differently from their parents once they came of age. Getting rid of slave-holding adults would accomplish nothing if their children were kept alive to take their place, in time, as the new masters. Of the 17 white children aged 10 or under who died in the revolt, at least one had already become a lawfully sanctioned participant in the slave system. 10-year-old Putnam Moore, killed at the first house that the rebels attacked, was Nat Turner's legal owner. Okay, I'm going to skip some of this article here because I want to get to a certain part. It goes further to say that concerning their disposition in reference to killing. It says that they may have found cold dispassion necessary in order to carry out the mission they had undertaken at tremendous risk to their own lives. These men saw themselves as soldiers, in some cases as soldiers sent on a mission by God himself. Nat Turner told his followers that the Holy Spirit had shown him a vision of white spirits and black spirits engaged in battle while blood flowed in the streams. Although faced with having to take the lives of men, women, and children, Turner and his men likely felt they must not be deterred from carrying out the Almighty's injunction to slay their enemies with their own weapons. They may have found the task before them unpleasant, or it may have felt like long-delayed vindication. Either way, killing all the whites they encountered was the only way they believed they might have a chance of fulfilling the cherished goal of freedom for which they were willing to sacrifice their lives. The article goes further to say, Will, whose willingness to shed blood with his powerful broadaxe led Nat Turner to deem him the executioner. That's some guy named Will. They called him, I guess, Will the Executioner. Articulated the single-mindedness of purpose. On the eve of the revolt, he explained to Turner his presence among the. conspirators by saying his life was worth no more than others, and his liberty as dear to him. Had the rebels succeeded, they and their people would have thought the violent deaths of a few white children a small price to pay for the freedom they had long been denied. Yes, like I said, I had skipped forward in this article because I wanted to get to that part where Will, the executioner, as he was called, had said his life was worth no more than others. That stuck out to me because a thought similar to that had come to me a while back, well, decades ago, matter of fact, when I was going through some situations. I had, because of what I was going through, and it was extreme, dire, I had to ask myself, you know, mentally speaking, I had asked myself, do I have the right to live? I mean, mentally speaking, I asked myself that question in my own mind. I thought the thought, do I have the right to live? And I never forget how my mind, my brain, came back with the answer, no. Well, if you don't know, you got to know. That shocked me. It scared me even. And then, well, me being me, I asked myself another question. Well, if I don't, who does? I was perplexed, really. I asked myself the question, you know, mentally, thinking, well, if I don't, who does? That is, if I don't have the right to live, who does? The brain came back with the answer, nobody. I felt so much better about that because that indicated to me that we on this earth are all equal in this thing called life. If you want to live, leave people alone. If you don't want to live, you don't cherish your life, keep fucking with people. You might lose it. Anyway, we got about 90 seconds left of the show, and I want to say thank you for listening before I go out with a song. And we'll be back next week to continue with more. Well, this article is done on Nat Turner. We'll be back next week with the police issue. We'll be back next week with that. So we're going to go out with a song and with Raphael, Yes, Wait, No. So here we go. And thanks for listening. Till next time.
Like I ain't pick you up when they let you down. Where is my turn? I don't have patience. You need to make up your mind. What's it gonna be this time, baby? Why even waste my time? Here we go. To the next one. How you gonna forget me when you know that I'm the best one? Said you gon' hold me down, but I ain't never been so high. So when you ask me to trust you, I'm like,
yes, wait, no, I don't know. I'm really not sure about it. So
you were mine.
Yes, wait, no, I don't know. I'm really not sure about it,
I got a lot on my mind, not playing with you this time. I do not care if you cry, it's not enough to be fine. Only baby, you need more than that for me. Nothing more precious than loyalty. And if you ain't feeling all that, then why even waste my time? Here we go. Don't fall a little, then you're on to the next one. Forget me when you know that I'm the best one. Said you gon' hold me down, but I ain't never been so high, high. When you ask me to trust you, I lie.
I don't know. I'm really not sure about it. So
you were mine.
Yes, wait, no. I don't know. I'm really not sure about it.
Are you gonna lie? Are you gonna lie forever? Are you gonna lie? Are you gonna lie forever? Are you gonna lie? Are you gonna lie forever?